Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Red Inca. We're going to do an episode in the year in Sri Lanka cricket because it was a weird year. I'm not sure they ever have non-weird years, but this one has piqued my personal interest. And for that, we have Mark Machado from Sri Lanka on 99.94 to have a crossover episode. All right, Mark. So the reason I got you on is recently I was contacted by another pro cricket writer and he was saying to me, I want to follow your career path. He said, but the one thing I don't understand is how you follow all these teams. It's too many teams and you know too much about too many of them. And I was like, well, the basic way of doing it is I kind of compartmentalize them, right? Of this team I now need to know a lot about because they're getting very bad, or this team I now need to know a lot about because they're getting very good. This team is good. This team is interesting, whatever. For a long period of time, I would say that Sri Lanka has not particularly been on my radar. It's been in the box of very, very bad, and I'll get interested when something happens. I would say that this year they have not been terrible, and they have... There are signs of a pulse in Sri Lankan cricket that we have not seen for quite some time.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good breakdown of that's kind of a potted history of Sri Lankan cricket over there, Jared. It's either really, really good or really, really bad. It's been quite bad, if you're going to be honest, since about 2015. I think the back end of 2021, we started to see a small pulse reappear, a finger will start to twitch, and now it kind of feels that we are, I don't want to use the word good because we're about to go on a tour of India, but we're somewhere near competitive. We've had quite a I think it's been, if you're a Sri Lanka fan, it's been an exciting 12 months.
Good is a stretch, right? You know, but in the World Test Championship, you've got a positive record. Asia Cup obviously came through, and there are players again getting picked up in, you know, in the IPL and things like that. So there is something to talk about. Whereas I think if we'd done this last, I think the last time it might've been before I even had Estelle on the network, I got her on and we did about 18 months of the Omni Shambles, right? Like we've moved on from Dick Weller never playing again and then playing quite after that and all that sort of stuff. So things have changed. Let's have a look at the good in test matches. So they won a series against West Indies and they won against Bangladesh. I would say that was pretty good. And then on the back of that, they drew series against Australia, which I think anyone drawing against Australia at the moment means that they're playing pretty good cricket. Australia probably being the form test playing nation until whatever England is doing at the moment. And they also drew at home against Pakistan, which was really, really interesting because I had that penciled in as a victory for Pakistan going in. That's all pretty good, right? It's not you know, light your panties on fire and run around, you know, a bonfire or anything. But of recent times of Sri Lankan cricket, that feels like a really positive, what was that, about 18 months, I suppose.
Yeah, it's been a good 18 months. Weirdly, as you were talking through it, I was thinking about my emotions going into it. I felt we probably were expecting to win that Australia series only because we had the Gaul factor, right? Playing Sri Lanka in Gaul is a very difficult place for teams. If you haven't played a lot of cricket there, and we know Australia don't play a huge amount of cricket in Sri Lanka, it's a very difficult place to go on and win a test that. So you always feel if we're playing at Gaul, we're in a chance to win it because we're going to pull out spinners from all over the place, mystery spinners, finger spinners, wrist spinners, all types of spin. I'm going to try and get you out. And then that Pakistan series, going into it, I was a bit apprehensive, but I probably came away from it thinking probably should have got those wins and got higher up that World Test Championship ranking maybe. But yeah, I think that as a test side, I think we are quite fierce at home. Like, I don't think people are coming over to Sri Lanka thinking we're going to be a pushover. I'm still a bit nervous about us playing away from home, but I suppose that's how a kind of average, if there is such a thing, kind of test nation is, right? Pretty all right at home, pretty competitive at home and not great away.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Even within that, that's not really how it's felt in Sri Lanka for a period of time. You know, we saw pretty ordinary England side over there, for instance, you know, in the middle of their, worst year and a half. So there has been times where Sri Lanka hasn't looked quite as good. Yeah, the Australian one, I get the feeling with the – sorry.
I think what we need to talk about, because we're kind of skimming around this, is that essentially Sri Lanka reset how it does cricket. It reset probably just after that England series when England came over. I think England were the first team to come over after the pandemic. During the pandemic, a lot of the players who played professional cricket and any sort of cricket had basically not played in Sri Lanka. They had a really aggressive lockdown. They were petrified of COVID, rightly so, petrified of COVID rampaging through the island. And then after that England series, when England came over, and also when they came over to England in 2021, they, in that kind of in-between time, they had a long period of thinking about what's going on, what we're doing right here, what we're doing wrong here. And, you know, there's enough cricketing brains on the island and with people associated with Sri Lankan cricket that Sri Lanka should almost always be able to produce decent players. It was a case of just harnessing those players into a group that in the first instance can become competitive. And I think that's kind of what we've seen, definitely with Test cricket in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and so for me, I had them down as having the easiest World Test Championship schedule based on opponents and where they were playing them. And so I'm not massively surprised that they did well as well, especially if they did think about it a little bit. So the losses to India were probably predictable, but no one was really expecting them to get much out of that series anyway. You go to the ODIs, and this year alone is kind of it's interesting. They beat Australia at home, but then they drew with Afghanistan at home. I'm still not sure that there is as much of a ODI feeling as there is perhaps a T20 feeling. And we can get to why that is perhaps later on. But this is a weirdly unimportant and yet important year of ODI cricket, because the World Cup comes up next year. The Afghanistan, I know it was only a one game loss, but they have lost to Afghanistan a couple of times. And if you look at their data, weirdly enough, they don't seem to play spin particularly well in white ball cricket for a country that the ball, according to Hawkeye and Crickviz, the ball spins more in Sri Lanka than anywhere else. And yet Sri Lankan batters against the white spinning ball don't seem to play it that well.
It's the kind of great mystery of Sri Lankan cricket at the moment, right? It's like, why are we playing spin so badly, where not only does the ball spin the most, but we've got some incredible spinners, and there's no end of, you know, as I already mentioned, there's no end of spinners coming through as well. I think all of the top 20 top wicket takers in domestic first class cricket in Sri Lanka were all spinners. There wasn't a single seamer in the top 20. So it's absolutely like, if you can solve this problem, would be on to a winner. I think we are getting better at it. I say maybe that's more optimism than fact. That Afghanistan series, which only ended a few weeks ago, we went into it with our kind of regular, I suppose, arrogance, overconfidence, and we lost the first match in much a similar way as we did in the Asia Cup, and which we'll talk about that in a bit. And then the second match got rained off, and then the third match, we started to build resilience. That's when I really started to see resilience come through. I've been seeing it re-emergence in Sri Lankan cricket in the last 12 months. And I think that with this group of players that we've got, this group of lads, I think the thing that's going to take us to the next level, that's going to see us win those tighter games in conditions that we consider exotic, it's all a mental thing. And that's what I think I'm starting to see. When I go back to that Australia series as well, that was another, I thought, quite a big moment for Sri Lanka, for this particular side, because obviously that Australia side, regardless of the fact that they probably weren't on full strength and that they don't travel to Asia a huge amount, still Australia were always going to be favourites for that when you consider how poor Sri Lanka cricket's been the last few years. To win it, and to win it as emphatically as we did, to bring through youngsters, I'm going to mention Walala Gate, which has almost become a joke on this podcast. If you listen to the Shrunker at 99.94, because I absolutely adore this kid. He's like 19 and I think he's going to tear it all up. And to top it all off, he went to the wrong school as well. So he went to St. Joseph. So I must really rate him if I think he's going to do it. And you know, he kind of had a breakthrough over there and he did the business again against Afghanistan that last match. I think when you look at the players that Sri Lanka have playing white ball cricket at the moment, they seem to me to be like they could be much more effective playing 50 overs opposed to 20 overs. I think in 20 overs, our strike rate is still a bit too slow to be overly competitive. And I think, you know, some of those players that I've got, I think will grow into it in the next few years. But I think, if 2023 is going to be a big year for 50-over cricket, then Sri Lanka potentially have a good bunch of players who can do something in it. That said, I think we're also going to be going to Zimbabwe in June as well to try and have to qualify for the World Cup. And let's see how that goes. If we can get some momentum behind us, if we can show that resilience I talked about, then I'm pretty confident we can make it. But 6 months? That's a huge amount of time for Sri Lankan cricket. That could potentially be 3 or 4 captains away.
Yeah, and 7 coaches.
I'm Jared Kimber, and I host 2 podcasts on 99.94. Red Inca, which is chats on trends and stories within the game, with a weekly Q&A where I can be asked about anything from a time-travelling Don Bradman to which cricket ground serves the best food. And Double Century, a look at the historical stories that make cricket what it is today. You can search for either of them in your favourite podcast platform or on the 99.94 DM app.
So let's talk about T20s. They won a single match of their first 10 T20s to start the year. They had a tie in there as well, so I'm being a bit naughty there. Lost the first game of the Asia Cup. They then won, 5 on the trot to win the tournament, which included 3 straight at the end against India and Pakistan. I talked to you not long after that, and I said they had no chance of winning or really making the finals, and you were a lot more optimistic. I think they basically were exactly the team I thought they were, which is outside of Namibia, they could beat everyone that they should beat, but they're not really good enough to be consistently threatening against the best teams. Not that they were that far away, but they also, it would have looked a little fluky if they'd made the finals, I would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't quite realise, it hadn't occurred to me that their record was that bad going into the Asia Cup. I think the thing that I'm really excited about Sri Lankan white ball cricket, as you can probably tell, and maybe that's just my natural optimism anyway, but there's so many individual players. If you could ask me this time last year how many of this team are really world-class players, I probably would have just said Hasaranga, maybe Chamira. And now I think there's, those two, obviously Chamira's got fitness worries, and I also think Dikshana's kind of, really sees the year. He's probably the most improved player in white ball cricket in Sri Lanka in the last 12 months. He also looks like he's going to be playing a lot of franchise cricket and be kind of quite central to what CSK and that whole CSK franchise do around the world the next few years. And I think there's a couple of batsmen. I think Pratham Visanka and Kusal Mendes have really kind of seized their opportunities this year. This year really was, it's all about the Asia Cup win, right? That was the high point in it. I come off the back of it, I meet you a few days later, I bump into you, and I'm just like, yeah, well, obviously we're going to win it now. There's nowhere else to go.
You were very punchy. I should have recorded that just for this moment. Because when I said to you, what are you talking about? There's nothing in this record that tells me this team is going to make the top 4.
So a lot of my kind of thought process was that if we're going into it off this win and we're just beating, we're beating India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, we're beating everyone in Asia. We didn't fluke the cup. There were some really strong performances in there. I thought maybe there was a good chance that we might be able to get enough wins together and get over the line. I think there was two key factors that outdid us. Firstly, we ran out of bowlers. I think at one point I was convinced Chris Silverwood might end up making his debut for Sri Lanka. And just our batsmen are just so not used to playing on pitches outside of Asia. The Asia Cup win happens because outside of Bangladesh, there is no other team on this planet who played as much cricket in Bangladesh as Sri Lanka, right? So they managed to get these wins in that tournament because they're so used to playing in those conditions, right? And I think this year and the next year and potentially a bit of the year after that, it's all about trying to get our top players out playing on as many different conditions, as many different surfaces as possible, and just building up all that experience on how to play different bowlers and different pitches, I think.
Being that they were still within a sniff of the semi-finals, which is, I think, I had that as their top level, and that's exactly where they ended up, in a tournament where they lost to Namibia, I'm not sure that it's an overall bad situation. We saw their limitations and we saw their strengths. And in one way, the Namibia loss, you almost have to push aside. But if you look at the last two World Cups, they have beaten all the teams that aren't quite as good as them. And they have struggled against all the teams that are better than them. That's actually a better place to be than, you know, being, you know, suddenly beating Australia out of nowhere, but then losing to Netherlands and Namibia and all that. Do you know what I mean? They're there and thereabouts, and that's appropriately. If I was coming away from that, and as a Sri Lankan, you know, working with the Sri Lankan team, I'd be thinking to myself, we know what our level is, and it's now up to us if we can get to that, you know, the next bit. So we're in that, you know, the top six teams bracket.
So Stella and I talk a lot about how important it is for our players to end up playing in different franchise tournaments, right? Cricket. And I know this is a constant theme in almost all the content that you create, Jared, is that cricket's ever evolving. It's going to look very different in 5 years' time to what it does now in terms of when players play, how they play, who they play with, and who their contracts are. I think Sri Lanka is probably going to end up with, or the challenge in Sri Lankan cricket is, how do we keep our, how do we create superstar players and yet make sure they're always available when we need them, right? At some point, they'll have to make a decision on, you know, is it more important that someone plays the first-class domestic tournament or goes and plays in a tournament in the UAE? I say at some point, they're already starting to make those decisions now. I think it's whether Sri Lanka ever have a world-beaten side, you know, ever have a world-beaten era ever again like they do, it's more down to how the administrators and the government to a degree as well, because of the way Sri Lankan cricket works, are able to manage that process with the players. Because we know the enthusiasm for the game will always be there. We know that we'll always produce talented players. But it, as you said, it's about being able to get the players to the next level. Mm. In the last kind of 18 months, we've seen a team go from the whole, you know, the Durham incident to actually being kind of reasonably competitive. They're going to be competitive at home and they're going to probably struggle away. Sri Lankan cricket is never going to play enough games, never going to be able to provide a team that is going to get enough experience in Australia or England that they're going to be able to go away and, you know, be competitive there, unless they embrace all the trappings that future franchise leagues can potentially offer them, right? If they can have, you know, five players playing in South Africa, six players playing in the Big Bash, then they can come back and, you know, they can share that knowledge. And that's the way they're going to have to build the next generation. And I think that's, you know, something, one of the reasons why I'm so excited about Sri Lankan cricket is because we are seeing players start to go now as well. We're seeing, you know, if we go back to the IPL, Patarana makes his debut for CSK before he's on the radar of anywhere near the national selection. He kind of comes out of left field. And it just shows that, firstly, people who look at these kind of things for the franchise teams are looking at domestic and even schoolboy cricket in Sri Lanka, and also rate the players that they're producing. So I think it should be an exciting time. But then again, this is Sri Lankan cricket. Anything can happen. You know, Angelo Matthews might end up being captain again going into that World Cup. Who knows?
I think the players in the IPL is really interesting. Also, last time I did a, you know, an episode like this on Sri Lankan cricket was with Estelle, as I was talking about before. And at that stage, the women weren't playing any cricket, right? So there are really positive signs. There's a couple of negatives too. I would say that DDS, Dhananjaya da Silva, had a regression year after, you know, looking like the player I've always hyped him up as. Kusel Mendes.
Can I just stop you there? I think, yeah. Jared, you've basically become a shrunken dad to poor old DDS. I actually think he finished off quite strongly because he had periods out of the team. I
think he averaged under 30 in every format he played this year.
He got an incredible century against Pakistan.
He averaged 60 the year before, though. What I'm saying is, I think he's somewhere between that level, right? I don't think he's ever going to average much more than 35 in Test cricket and maybe, you know, low 30s in ODI cricket and be handy in T20 cricket. But we did see a couple of years where he was perhaps showing that he could do more than that. So it's a bit of a regression. Kusel Mendes in Test cricket, you know.
What we should say is, I think for a generation of Sri Lankan cricketers, this current white ball generation, effectively Test cricket doesn't really exist for them, right?
Yeah.
They're gonna play 25 Tests over the next 5 years. They're gonna play 25 T20 games, ODI games in 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
Right. So I do think that there's a serious risk of Sri Lanka just dropping up. Like, there's a generation of Sri Lankan batsmen, Chandamal, Dimuth, and Angelo Matthews, kind of the kind of core of them, who are kind of holding that batting together. And I wonder if once they retire, once they decide that they've had enough, I wonder if Sri Lanka will ever actually be competitive again.
It's interesting.
The system doesn't let them be. Yeah, there's no point.
Chandamal averaged over 100 this year, didn't he? Matthews was 50. And I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, is that just because they're generational Test players and that's where they've come through? Or is it, you know, just dumb luck? In the bowling, Test bowling, Jayasuriya, Prabhas Jayasuriya and Asitha Fernando both took a lot of wickets. So that's a spinner and a seamer. There are still players there. One day cricket, you've got Nasanka and Asalanka, both averaging, around 50 in one day cricket. And a bit of a throwback name as well, Jeffrey van der Zee, coming back. There's a lot of names here. And if you go to T20 cricket, obviously the two obvious ones in T20 cricket are, you know, Atiq Shana and Hasaranga. And you can throw Rajapaksa in there as well if you want the third one. Although I think he's maybe a tier behind the other two as far. And the great thing for South Africa, I said that off air, I think, as well. Don't know why I've got South Africa on my brain.
They're very similar countries in many ways.
Basically the same place in my head. Yeah. It's a very good mix, those two, because Atiq Shana can bowl early on, right? Hasaranga can bowl in the middle, which gives him a flexibility. Hasaranga can bat, right? Gives him a little bit of hitting at the end, which means it's not quite as weak. There are much better teams than Sri Lanka that would absolutely kill to have that. I think India right now would be looking at that going, probably, you know, in terms of spin quality, that's, you know, as good as they would be able to get, especially when you factor in the batting. That's really interesting. Then you've got Kumara, Madison, and what's the, I'm missing someone as well. There's a who was the young kid?
Patarana.
There's about, and not including Chimera, there's probably about, 4 to 5 in Sri Lankan seamers that you look at and you go, there's something here. Like, there's something to work from after a period of where that wasn't the case. And you go back through all the names I've said, you've got a couple of old guys in Chandamal and Matthews, but a lot of the players I've talked about are under 32 and some cases even younger than that again. There is a real building of talent coming through. And this is talking about the guys who've had a good year in one format or another. That's not talking about the younger players who are coming out of nowhere and everything else. I can't remember the last time I looked at Sri Lanka and was like, there's a lot of good players in multiple formats that are quite handy in the way that we're currently seeing.
Yeah, I think there's an element of, I think success breeds success. So I think some of the younger players, if you're in that domestic setup and if you're playing cricket in Colombo and you're seeing players that were kind of near your level accelerate and go through, what we'll also start to see is players be pulled up, raising their game. If you look at Lauru Kumara, he gets injured, I think, in May, barely bowls a ball till he has to come back into the side at some point during the T20 World Cup. And then his spell against Australia, he didn't get any wickets. But, I mean, like, he for all intents and purposes, to me, he looked like a Aussie quick, right? He looked like he was born to bowl on that Perth surface. And I can't remember the last time Sri Lanka had, at that stage, it was what, his fourth or fifth choice seamer, a fourth or fifth choice seamer who looked so at home on the biggest stages of them all, playing cricket. It's a really exciting time, I think, in so many ways. I think, you know, I'm a massive advocate of the LPL. I know it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. I say it's a great tournament to watch, but we're in its third iteration.
Don't you actually say it's the best tournament in the world?
I say it's the best tournament in the world, yeah. LPL, Champions League, the Premier League, those are the only three things in the world worth watching, apart from Middlesex Merit Table 2 in Rugby Union, which is where I play. We're starting to see the impact it's having on wider cricket in Sri Lanka, because it's not just a case of, right, there's maybe 13 or 14 good players. There's probably actually about 30 players who deserve to be looked at and be known kind of around the world for their cricketing prowess. And I'm kind of loath to say it, but I think that might be testament to the way the game's being run on the island at the moment. And I say that because they are people out there who want to rip everything up and say that we're not achieving our potential.
Well, I would say compared to the last 5 or 6 years, then, I mean, I'm not saying this is a golden era for Sri Lankan cricket, because it's obviously not, but I think there's 15 world-class players off the top of my head over there at the moment. And there's no way I was thinking that a year ago or a couple of years ago. I thought that, as someone who watches the T20 leagues quite closely, I thought that the Sri Lankan league was best way of putting it, the best one to feast on if you were looking for players, because there was a lot of talent there that no one was paying money for, right? And I think the difference now is that the LPL certainly helped with that, but that the overall, because Sri Lanka are just winning a little bit more and, you know, fighting a little bit more in some of these games, I don't think that's the case anymore, right? That on its own is really interesting. If that comes from good administration, and let's be honest, the Sri Lanka cricket is not particularly famous for good administration, but if that comes from anything there, I think that's a win. All I would point to is the 5 years previous, you would have to say that they also play a big part in the fact that nothing was happening, and you could see players playing over there that were of a high quality that just weren't developing. But if they are developing now, but just to go back to what you said before, which I think is really interesting, how Sri Lanka now, where basically this FTP is the first FTP where the IPL / franchise leagues are in charge, right? It's not that they weren't already in charge almost before, but now because of what's happening with Major League Cricket and the South African League and the UAE League, so many IPL owners own so many teams around the world. It'd be really interesting to see what happens directly in Sri Lanka. We know that there's always been a thirst for cricket in Sri Lanka, although so much of it is through, you know, the posh boy schools, but still it exists. Do they become a feeder team? Do they manage to maybe get it together in one format and make it work? Like, what is the next 3 to 5 years of Sri Lankan cricket? And you know, I'm not expecting you to answer that question, but it's really interesting, right? Because if they can handle it in a similar way to what New Zealand did, they can actually end up with some really good international teams. And if they handle it in a more of a West Indian way, then it's back to what we saw a couple of years ago.
So I'm going to answer this by asking, why is the administration, why have I dared to say something positive about the administration? And I think the reason is because actually the administrators realised, right, there might be a little bit of piddly money kicking about here, but what's down the track? If we get this LPL going, we're suddenly going to have all the owners from franchises in India and Pakistan want a piece of this.
Just to chip in there, I don't think people understand that basically Sri Lanka were playing international cricket, not just T20 cricket, with one hand behind their back by not having a franchise, because they couldn't get international coaches in. They couldn't get development. The players weren't as professional. I was talking to Sri Lankan players and they were like, there's no point playing T20 in Sri Lanka at the moment. That's how far back they were.
Yeah. And they've created the LPL. They've got it going. Next year, we're also going to have a T10 tournament. And I know there's a whole discussion to be had about that, but the whole point is it's effectively trying to open up the, you know, from a very cynical perspective, it's because the administrators want to bring the money into the island, right? And they realize that they've got to kind of, to a degree, get their house in order, because even if these billionaires are from India, they still, you know, they still follow a proper due diligence process, and they still want to have a process in place. You know, the kind of older days of doing business are in that part of the world are starting to kind of fade away to a degree, and transparency is kind of, you know, is what people want, right? And I think then we're kind of heading towards a situation where cricket is going to act more like football does in Western Europe, and at which point I think you've got to try and, you know, you've got to figure out how does this all work for Sri Lanka. And I think at that stage, Sri Lanka effectively become like a South American country. They become like a Uruguay or an Argentina, where their job is try and run a good domestic structure, keep enthusiasm within the game, but also produce these talents that are going to go all around the world and, you know, make a load of money, raise the profile off the island to a degree, and also at some point, hopefully come together and win tournaments. I mean, I'm talking to you the day after Messi won the World Cup, right? And now I'm enthused. I'm like, right, could Hasaranga be our Messi-like figure? Hopefully I don't have to wait till he's 35 to see another World Cup win.
I think... that's an incredible way to finish this podcast. But the only other thing I would say is, if I was Sri Lanka cricket right now, what I would be doing is hiring someone whose job it was to get these players in as many franchises as possible as well, right? And from a young age, get them developing and everything else. I think what happened before was this sort of left and right way of looking at it, which was if you want to go play franchises, you go play franchises. And occasionally maybe a national coach or a selector would help you because they wanted you to play in something. Whereas I think now, if I was working for Sri Lanka, someone who got paid $50,000 a year, but made sure that all their best 25 players were playing in leagues all around the world, that means Sri Lanka doesn't have to play those players as much. And also, there's a reason to play for Sri Lanka. If you've actually got not just an agent, but someone within the cricket board actually getting you gigs, I just think that's a massive way for something that Sri Lanka could look at. And they, as far as I'm aware, that job doesn't exist in cricket. But I think in the next 5 years, I think a few of the smaller boards will have people that do that sort of stuff. And that is, then you have that, then you, what you hope for is this sort of the Avengers Assemble system, right? That they all go off and get good, and then they come back and they win you a one day World Cup when they weren't favorites I was going to say Belgium. Belgium's probably a bad one, but you know what I mean? Like, suddenly you look at it and you go, oh, this Belgium team, all these players have played everywhere. It doesn't matter if, you know, the Belgium league is not, I don't know if the Belgium league is not very good. I've gone completely.
It's not. That's a really good comparison, actually, Jared. Well done.
I'm just saying, you went Hasaranga and I went, Kevin, Kevin, is it Kevin, isn't he?
Yeah, it's Kevin. Yeah.
It sounds like you should be playing cricket for South Africa. But thank you very much for coming on my podcast and for coming on your and allowing me on your podcast. And we'll hear more from you soon on Sri Lankan cricket. But I think you two are doing very well, and I've enjoyed listening to it. And I personally like it best when Sri Lanka has lost, because all that optimism that you have gets drained out of you so quickly. And that's the kind of person I am.
Thanks for having me. And hopefully Sri Lanka never, ever lose again.
Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka on 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast, and tell all your friends and family about us. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Sports stars. They're like superheroes.
But they're actually real.
Which is why we've made a podcast about them. You see,
they've all got a story.
But too many of these stories were cut short.
Kobe Bryant.
Payne Stewart.
Flo Jo.
Phil Hughes.
Justin Fashanu.
We're writing episodes about all of them.
And sadly, many more.
Death of a Sports Star. A new series from Crowd Network.